Hello and welcome back to the Metaphysical Podcast. This is Victoria Duda from Zenith Lifestyle, bringing you the new episode entitled Existential Health. So far we have spoken a lot about a new paradigm, a paradigm that brings us into a world where it is not our solo current life that is taken into consideration, but also a series of lives, both before and after our present life, and also the non-physical realities that exist parallel to our normal, everyday physical reality. And the question that arises now after so much discussion is that, what is health in a new dimension, in a new paradigm? If we look at life from a greater perspective, both from a greater time perspective and also from a greater dimensional perspective, then how will we treat illness, and how are we going to treat the topic of illness versus health? And today, as we all know, that we are very much treated by doctors and physicians and in general the scientific community as some sort of biological machines. So if you're ill, then you're expected to go to the doctor or to go to a hospital where you will be examined like a machine that has a part that went wrong. If you have an illness, then the doctor is going to look at which organ failed or what kind of function within the body failed. And then you can change that organ or treat that organ or put some new chemicals into the body that are supposed to restore the functioning of the body. And I don't know about you, but I actually feel worse whenever I walk into a hospital. I already instantaneously feel ill just by having all those machines and all those technological things around. And it's quite striking that it does not feel very therapeutic. It does not feel healing. Quite on the opposite, I remember that I've been visiting Epidauros in Greece, which is a place where they had an old Asclepius temple. More than a temple, they had an old Asclepius sanatorium, like an ancient hospital that was dedicated to the god Asclepius, who was the god of medicine. And I remember I was walking around that place, and it was, even after 2,000 years, completely remarkable how much healing power the whole place held. So just walking around that area that is still in a remarkable condition today, you could feel the healing power even after so many years. And you instantaneously felt healthy. And there was a theater that was put there because at that time people believed that in order to become healthy, you have to start feeling better. So they put on comedies. They made you watch something that is fun. Then they had a gymnasium because they believed that in order to get healthy, you need to move your body and you have to become physically stronger. So they did exercise there. And then they had the sleeping temples where you were supposed to go to sleep. And while you were asleep, you were visited by the gods. Today we would say you were visited by your own subconscious. And you got a message of how to heal yourself. And in those times, as you see from my description, healing was a very holistic approach. They knew that you couldn't just heal an organ. They knew they couldn't just heal an illness. They had to heal the entire person. They had to heal the mind, the body, and the spirit. And interestingly, there were not just the doctors. The doctors were called Asclepiades, the sons of Asclepius. But they also had the priests, and they were not the same people. The priests were the ones who helped you with your temple sleep, and they helped you to interpret the dreams, the healing dreams that you had. But they were not the same, and they had different approaches. The doctors were quite scientific in those standards of the day. They were looking at symptoms and they were looking at remedies. And the priests were more spiritual and religious in their nature. The difference between those times and today was that those priests and doctors, they coexisted in harmony. So while today a lot of doctors are quite hostile towards so-called alternative therapies or spirituality, in ancient times, those naturally went hand in hand. Also, it's quite remarkable to say that there were two goddesses that were brought into relation to healing and health, and one was Hygieia, where the word hygienic comes from, and the other was Panacea. And Panacea was the goddess responsible for healing and for giving remedies, and Hygieia was more responsible for prevention, for keeping health without having to suffer illness first. So it was an approach that held both in high esteem, the prevention aspect and then the remedy aspect. Today, the emphasis is much more on remedy. We start only to be concerned about health. We only go to the doctor, we only go to do something about our health when we're usually feeling some kind of symptoms. But in those days, there was a lot of emphasis on balance, on mind and body balance, and also on the understanding of the importance of the environment. That a person was not just looked at as a machine that exists independently from the social, ecological and political factors that are shaping his or her life, but very well as part of it. So today, as opposed to the old Greek system, we have a very reductionist medicine. We reduce our body and our health to a machine. And it's interesting to know that throughout history, it seemed that healthcare always kind of oscillated between a reductionist approach and a holistic approach. Because it is true that only recently we have the biomedical paradigm, but there were always quite reductionist medical understandings even in the past. Consider, for example, shamanic traditions. And shamanic traditions, they are very spiritual in their nature. So even today we have shamanic practitioners that can give us an idea of what a shamanic approach would be to health and healing. So if someone goes today, for example, to a shamanic practitioner, then the shamanic practitioner will very much look into the life of that person. And if that happens in an indigenous group, then what the shaman does, it often brings together the entire village, the entire society, and starts to ask questions to everybody. So if someone gets sick, if someone has an illness, they look at not just that one person, but they look at their families and all the social relationships that a person is having. So sometimes it turns out that the whole village is somehow involved. There was maybe a fight, and that fight maybe involved a bunch of people. Or there was a kind of old conflict that came back. And again, it involved a bunch of people. And then the shaman, very often through shamanic traveling, through, you know, by accessing the non-visible realities, tried to find the reason for that imbalance. But that reason very often was not in the patient, but let's say in the village. And it could easily happen that they were talking more about the village and they were talking more about the conflict that caused the illness than the illness itself. And sometimes the person themselves got short of remedy because the emphasis was on finding the reason and discussing it politically. And what I'm trying to say with that, that was also a reductionist approach. It was just putting the emphasis on exactly the opposite than what we are used to today. So we are now searching for something that is metaphysically more holistic, that is taking into consideration both aspects, the person and the society, also the biological aspects and the spiritual aspects. It is often quite hard for us to understand old systems, and it's quite hard to learn from them, because that's what we want to do. We want to find systems that are more heuristic than ours and learn from them. But there was even a report from Zaire, where anthropologists were observing a village, and they tried to find out what those people knew about anatomy. And it turned out that they had such a vague understanding of where a biological person stops and where the outside environment begins, that there was no actual description of a separate body. That is very interesting. Think of that today in our society, we all pretty much agree that a human body stops at the skin. So everything that is outside of your skin is no longer you. And then we can take that logic a little bit further, and we can remember that psychologists also find out that every culture has their own personal spheres. So even outside your skin, every person has a kind of place around their body that they feel comfortable with if other people enter it. And that space is different from culture. For example, northern countries, they tend to have a smaller personal sphere. So it means that if people come very close to them, then they start to feel uncomfortable. But people in the south, they are quite happy when people get, you know, really close into your face. So that just indicates that that sphere, that invisible sphere, is not the same in different cultures. But of course, that's a psychological thing. But we all tend to agree, I guess, in our modern society, that our skin is the outer layer. It's the outer boundary of our physical body. But those people from Zaire that were observed by the anthropologists, they didn't see it like that. For them, it was really blurred where one person stops being that person and where the outside environment begins, which is logical if we start to think of multidimensional paradigm. Because if we look into the multidimensional paradigm, we can realize that, wait a minute, what about our aura? Does my aura belong to my body? If I assume that my body has an aura and that aura is extending beyond the physical body, then it's logical to assume that that aura of mine must be part of me. And in that moment, the boundaries are blurred. And probably that's what's happening in the community in Zaire that the people try to describe, because they don't know so exactly where a person stops and where another person begins. So we have systems that sometimes take into consideration the spiritual aspects of health, some don't. Today, of course, we have healing systems that are very much taking into consideration the spiritual aspects, certain types of psychotherapy, which is interesting to know that it's very similar in a lot of aspects to old shamanism. Yeah, if you look at today's psychotherapy that uses things like sharing your problems in a group, for example, trying to solve problems in a group, using things like psychodrama, where you are acting out in a group certain situation that might actually cause illness, or when you analyze dreams, when you use positive suggestions, when you use guided imagery, even when you use psychedelic therapy, those are all things that already were part of old shamanic traditions. But of course, today they don't merge with medicine. They don't merge with the healing of the body. So I'm asking another question, and this is what we want to try to find out, is where do the two merge? Where does the healing of the spirit or the psyche merge with the healing of the body? Is there a system that gives us a good example? And of course, we can think of the Chinese system that we already mentioned in previous podcasts, that very, very much more looks at interrelations than bodily mechanical functions. What I mean is that A traditional Chinese doctor is much more likely to see the human body as a kind of ecosystem where a flow of energy is taking place, what they call the qi. And illness comes from the fact that this qi somewhere is getting stuck or is not flowing sufficiently. And that is not just happening within the body, but also when the body interacts with its environment. So that system is much more open to the idea that health is not necessarily the perfect functioning of a machine. It is something else. And it's interesting to note that it seems that the traditional Chinese medicine is also not aiming at perfect functioning. It almost allows illness to be part of the natural order. What it aims at is the highest possible function. And I think this is a key. This is something that we really have to take very seriously, this idea of, do we want a perfectly functioning body, or do we want a body and a mind that is able to work in a way that is achieving its maximum potential? Psychotherapy is a little bit an example for that. In the old times of psychotherapy, like I'm thinking of times of Freud, for example, you went to the psychotherapist, and the psychotherapist identified that you have this and these neurotic behaviors, and then you did the therapy for, let's say, 3-4 years, and at the end of which the goal was to get rid of those neuroses. Now, what if you got rid of them? What if you were afraid of spiders and had a bit of tendency to OCD, and now you're not afraid of spiders and you are not obsessive about where you put your toothbrush? But nothing else changes in your life. Is that really a step forward? And today, psychotherapists starts to discover that, no, actually the absence of neurotic behavior is not necessarily psychological health. Psychological health also implies something positive. For example, ambition. For example, the understanding of a kind of meaning in your life that brings you forward. So it's not just the absence of something unwanted, but it's also the abundance of motivation and of life force. And I think the same applies also for the biological side of illness. That in order to really talk about health, I think we should start to emphasize the potential that we are all here to live, as opposed to just taking the absence of certain negative factors that we call illness or disease. That's why I gave the title Existential Health to this podcast, because I want to ask the question, who's healthier? Think of Nick Vujicic, who's the man who was born without arms and legs and who faced this incredible challenge and hardship where, as an 8-year-old boy, he wanted to kill himself in the bathtub because he thought he will never marry, he will never have a life that is worthy of anyone's attention, that he will never amount to anything, he will never have a job, he'll never have a family. And today, he's an inspirational speaker who has motivated millions of people and has a beautiful wife and, as far as I know, at least one beautiful child, maybe more in the meantime, I don't know. So who's healthier, him or, say, a kid, a teenager who has all the arms and legs he needs but is sitting in his room all day long eating junk food and playing computer games, not finding anything valuable to spend his time with? Who is healthier? Who is more whole? Whose life is more fulfilling its potential? Think of Helen Keller, who was deaf and blind ever since she was 19 months old, who couldn't even learn to speak because there was no way to teach her because she couldn't hear, she couldn't see anything. So she lost almost all contact with the outside world, and that's how she grew up. Until she learned to read letters written into her palm by her teacher. Then she became a great writer who wrote more than a dozen books, who became a political activist, who was one of the first activists for disability, people with disabilities, who became a supporter for social causes, for things like birth control, for women rights, for labor rights. So can we say she didn't have a healthy life? And this is a very, very important question, because it brings us to the existential program. Existentialist program is a phrase that is coined by Valdo Vieira, the founder of the International Academy of Consciousness. And it means that before we are born, our consciousness in the interlife period is making a kind of plan. And the more advanced we are evolutionary, the more our consciousness is advanced, the more this plan is universal. It's including others. It's including helping others. And sometimes when there are quite evolved consciousnesses, they put themselves onto this earth, into this life, with a huge challenge. Like being born without limbs, like being born but then healthy, but then losing your sight and losing your hearing in at an age of a baby. But there are challenges that would really cripple most. But these exceptional people, they don't get crippled by it, but they use that kind of condition to strengthen themselves even more. So, do you see what I'm trying to say? That if you take out their consciousness from the present life and you see it from a greater dimension, then they might be greater heroes because they have that condition. They might be people who are actually stronger, who are actually healthier, who are actually fitter than the rest. Because it's quite easy to be happy with two legs, two arms, and your eyesight, and your hearing, everything functioning very well. You have all the opportunities to be happy, and a lot of people still fail. But take that away, and those who still manage to be happy in that condition, they can be, from a spiritual point of view, considered as not just healthy, but hyper-healthy, healthier than healthy. Because this approach, this kind of thinking implies that we are here on earth to learn something, to experience something. We are in a school, and some of us get harder exercises. I think that that kind of thinking will really revolutionize also the value, our values that we attach our human lives. What I'm talking about is a kind of dynamic balance. So we can define health as a balance within the organism, as a biological, psychological, and spiritual balance. If you're balanced, if you're happy with your environment and within yourself, you usually say you're healthy. But when I say it's a dynamic balance, it also means that it's not within the system. The system is not intending you to keep in that balanced state. Because then life would start to stagnate. You wouldn't have new challenges. You wouldn't have new problems to solve. So an illness can be a new problem that is put in front of you to solve it. So that when you solve it, you don't just come out healthy, but you come out stronger and healthier than you were before. A lot of times when people become healthy after an illness again, an illness which they took into their own hands to heal, where they took responsibility for. And when they really looked into the origins of or what caused it, they sometimes say that they are healthier and stronger afterwards. There are people who call an illness a gift. And for many of us, that's quite hard to understand. But they really mean it as a gift. They really mean that word that they're saying, because they feel so blessed that the lesson they learned has brought them more value into their lives. I certainly can say from personal experience, I didn't have many illnesses in this life, but some injuries, that every injury that I ever had, and people say that also about illnesses, had a message, no exception. Nothing just happened out of the blue, and nothing just happened out of bad luck. It was something that brought my attention to an important thing that I maybe didn't take into consideration or that I needed to learn. In this sense, an illness or an injury is a kind of situation that is awaiting our creative response. And this is also the point where this new approach and this new paradigm is getting really tricky. Because if we say that an illness or an injury is waiting for us to respond creatively, that also means that it is in our responsibility to do something with it. And in our present mainstream paradigm, the responsibility for an illness is not within the patient. It's within the doctor or within God, something external anyway. So when people first hear the fact that they should take responsibility for their illnesses, that an illness can be a message that they can learn from, and when they do the learning, they will become better, that is quite a shock for a lot of people to hear. And they want to revolt against it. I had quite a shocking experience myself because I got injured. It was a sporting injury, and as a result of that, I couldn't lift my leg higher than my, you know, my pelvis without really being in pain. I couldn't really walk uphill and all that. It happened on a Monday. And I got really angry at me because it was my own negligence that it happened. I didn't warm up enough and I was overdoing something. As a result of that, I had this really painful and annoying kind of injury in my groin. And I was starting to beat up myself. I said, what an idiot you were. You know, now you can't go to the next training, which was on Thursday. And you caused yourself all this trouble and it will take weeks to heal. And I had a spiritual guide interfering who said, well, first of all, don't beat yourself up because a wise person learns from their mistakes and doesn't regret them. That was the first thing he said. And the second thing he said, this is not a bad luck scenario. This is a spiritual challenge. You must be at that training on Thursday. And your challenge is to heal that injury within 3 days. I said, how? And he said, well, talking about Reiki and doing podcasts on Reiki, and you go to the Reiki course, and then you go to the ISC course, and you learn about bioenergies, and then you practice that for month, and it's time to live what you preach. Lay down, direct the bioenergies into your groin, do that 2 times a day, don't expect immediate results, but if you do, I virtually promise you, on Thursday, you'll be fine. So I thought, worth a try, right? And I did that. I lay down. I moved the bioenergies like I learned and directed them into my groin. And as he said, nothing happened on the first day. Nothing much happened on the second day either. And even on the third day, I was quite in pain. But I thought, okay, I can go to the training and tell my sensei that it's going to be a bit limited what I can do. But as soon as I arrived at training and I started doing it, I realized that there was no pain. It was all gone, like the spiritual guide told me. And it stayed like that. It was gone, it was healed, it was over. And you would expect that I came home singing and happy and appreciating what happened. And I wish I could say I was, but the truth is I was shocked. My actual reaction was utter shock that I could not deal with, because it was a unmistakable proof to me that everything that has happened in my body is my own responsibility. And I can make myself ill, I can make myself injured, but I also have the power to make it go away. And I have that power, and therefore it is my responsibility. And to be honest, that was so much to take in that in the first moment when I realized that, I felt a kind of depression. Not joy, not relief, but a kind of depression. Don't worry, I got over it. And I took responsibility. But what I'm trying to say is that it shocks. And I heard that from other people who made similar experiences, that a very quick healing that is the result of changing your own thoughts and your own energies, it can be quite a paradigm-shifting, shocking experience. But of course, and this brings us to the last part of my talk that I want to mention, is that what are actually the aspects of healing in a multidimensional and spiritual kind of paradigm? The first thing definitely is what I just mentioned, to be able to work that life force energy that some people, like the homeopaths, call the vital force, or like the ISC, or originally Wilhelm Reich called the bioenergies. The Chinese call it qi, the Tibetans call it prana. It has all these names, and these names might actually not refer to the identical thing, but it definitely seems to refer to the same kind of reality. That there is a kind of energy inside of us that moves, that needs a harmonic flow, and that can also be transferred between human beings. Like that's how Reiki works that we were speaking about previously. The word energy itself is extremely problematic because it's not necessarily a substance or not necessarily something as measurable as electricity or electromagnetic flows. It is more like the vital life force being in a flow. And it's very, very hard to say or define what it really is. But those who work with it, they know how it feels and how it can be manipulated. It was actually Wilhelm Reich, I mentioned his name, and he was a very, very pioneering person who was actually one of Freud's students. He was one of the early psychoanalysts. But then he left psychoanalysis mainly because he was experimenting with something new that was almost heresy in psychoanalysis, because he was experimenting with actually touching the people, touching the patients that he had, because he realized that it is not just the psyche that holds, for example, memories of past trauma, traumatic experiences, but it's also the body itself, muscles. There are muscle blocks in each of us that Reich called the character armor, that are in certain spots that are corresponding with certain trauma that we experienced earlier in our lives. And part of his therapy was to find these and disarmor the muscular system to allow that bioenergy to flow freely within an organism again. And Reich also said that that bioenergy is part of a greater energy that is flowing in the entire universe, which he called the organ energy. And with that concept, he's very, very much fitting into our new paradigm, but also he was very, very much not fitting into his time. So like many other pioneers, he was persecuted and eventually died a tragic death in a lunatic asylum. But I believe that today his work will be and should be rediscovered and maybe put into more modern terms in order to make his ideas available to a number of therapies and a number of scientific investigations that would, I believe, largely benefit from knowing what he did. Today we have a number of therapies that work with the body, how the body is holding its muscle memory, good things and bad things from our past, which is generally called body work. I can think of the Alexander technique or the Feldenkrais system if you want to check that out. Those are all therapies that place emphasis on the body and how the body is interacting with the mind. And apart from that bioenergy, it is of course our mind that we have to, our the quality of our thoughts that we have to put a very strong emphasis on in order to understand where healing really comes from. We have spoken about this before, and I don't want to repeat your thoughts, but if you just recall the discussions about the placebo effect, some scholars actually say that they believe that the history of the entire medicine is the history of the placebo effect, that every healing is actually working mainly because the patient is believing in the power of the doctors and therefore is activating his or her own mind, and therefore he's activating his or her own innate immune system and healing powers. There is one method that I would like to mention if you or somebody wants to learn how to heal yourself with the power of your own thoughts. That method is the Silva method. It's developed by Jose Silva, who was a Mexican. And he was using a system that is derived from earlier pioneers of hypnosis and self-hypnosis. So it was Jose Silva who made the original auto-suggestion from Emile Cuyé that became famous, every day and in every way I become better and better. And he made that largely available to all his students and to all those who follow his method. But it is basically a way to bring into your awareness anything that is making you sick. And that is quite important, because what I want to say with that is that positive thinking doesn't mean that you are ignoring your problems and your illnesses. It just means that you look at them from a problem-solving perspective, not a problem-moaning-about-it perspective. So you identify something that you don't want, you identify something that is causing you suffering, and then some cases that, you know, might be a bodily symptom, and then you work with the positive and creative imagination of your own mind to change it. And that is a process, if done properly, that will activate the body's natural immune system and the body's natural ability to heal itself. But even that, and this is something that I want to emphasize, and let it also be the last thing that I'm saying today to make it strong as the last really important thing that I want to give you as a message for today, is that visualization itself does not seem to be enough. And there is a very good reason why visualization in itself doesn't seem to be enough. Because think of it that we said that an illness or an injury might actually be a message. It might be a message to pay attention to something that you didn't pay attention to before. It might be a message to say, change your lifestyle, change your diet, change your relationship with exercise, or change your relationships, period. Change your relationships with people. Become more loving. Become more imagine, like, say, a CEO that is super stressed, is always on the go, it's always on his laptop, is always working. Complete workaholic who then, as a result of that lifestyle, suffers a heart attack. Or suffers cancer, or whatever it is. And then maybe gets in touch with some progressive method, and he's been told to visualize becoming healthy again. And he does that. But we all can feel that it can't be sufficient. We all feel that how this story has to end is that the CEO is making some changes in his life. He's not afterwards such a workaholic than he was before. He is maybe paying more attention to his family. He's maybe starting to spend quality time with his wife, with his children. Maybe starts to become more socially active. Maybe starts to share his wealth. Maybe starts to donate things. Maybe starts, sets up a social project, whatever it is. Or maybe follows his life calling and is becoming interested in creating some form of art and expressing himself. whatever it is, but we feel that when the circle closes and he becomes healthy again, it has to be at a point where he's more healthy than he was before, where he gained something valuable, where he became a student of whatever illness he suffered. And through becoming a student, he has learned to overcome not just the illness, but to change those things in his life that were less than satisfactory and less than evolutionary before. And in that sense, I wish you a very good health. And I wish you that whatever challenges and problems you're facing at the moment, to be able to look at them as challenges to overcome and things to learn from, so that every day and in every way we can become not just better and better, but also wiser and wiser. Thank you very much for listening.